Welcome to Playing Iron, and I'm Dr. Bill Deagle, MD, and we have very, very radical guests in our programs trying to give you the truth so you can go back and rewrite history, expand your consciousness, realize that the world and our science and our understanding of the nature of reality is far different and far greater than anything you could imagine. And to give you some amazing new information on many different topics this evening, our special guest is John Ragsdale. And John is an electrical engineer. He actually does work setting up radio and television broadcast stations and engineering them, and is working in, I think, Michigan now. Is that right, John?
Yeah.
And, John, tell us a story about your father and the kind of work, because what we're going to be talking about is the history of nuclear warfare and the development of the bomb, and the fact that history, the reality of history, is far different and far more bizarre, if you want to call it, in terms of the players and the timing than anything you could imagine. Of course, they've, like they did in the movie 1984, they mentioned that if all of the records reflected the same lie, then history would be changed. This is an actual, if you want to call it, paraphrase of a comment in the book 1984, which is they always had the Ministry of Information always trying to rewrite history by changing all of the records. And if they could get every record changed, then, of course, history was changed. And we'll see this down through history, not just our recent history, but Roman history, Greek history, and ancient history has all been changed and revised and been developed specifically for the consumption of the, quote, public or the ignorant mass. So, John, can you give us a little introduction about yourself and what you do and about your father who worked on the projects before the Manhattan Project with Edward Teller and the nuclear scientists from America and Germany?
Well, I'm going to go ahead now. Hopefully, I can't hear that well. But basically, my dad worked, I guess you want to say, sort of in the wings on the Manhattan Project.
What was your dad's name, John?
Milton MacArthur Ragsdale.
Milton MacArthur Ragsdale. So he was a nuclear scientist, I understand. Is that right?
Well, no, actually, Dad wasn't. Dad was an electronics engineer.
Right, and of course, most of these detonations required very precise electronics. They called them Krytron switches in order to cause controlled detonations. And if you don't know how a bomb works, basically they explode a detonator-type bomb to compress the nuclear material to critical mass. And so being able to explode them at precise nanosecond intervals so that the compression of the material occurs uniformly throughout the material to cause compression and slow down the movement of neutrons in the material to start a chain reaction, which goes very, very fast, is the basic process. So the electronic engineering part of the nuclear physics is extremely important. So, continue.
Well, anyway, I guess I'm back on now.
Yeah, you're on. Go ahead. I can hear you really well, John.
All right. Well, I suppose that most of it was because of government secrecy. They couldn't even tell their wives and their children much about what went on, and so most of what we learned was from stuff that probably got out, not because they didn't want to, but just in normal conversations they couldn't help it. So you've got to realize is that even as a son and supposedly privy to a lot of stuff, that I'm not as privy to as much as you may think. However, I am privy to a lot more than you might think.
Right.
But the history books have been written to present the facts so that they coincide with what they want the public to believe.
Right.
I can give you one instance. All of your history books will tell you that the United States exploded its first nuclear device in 1945.
Well,
right. That's a flat-out lie. I promised Dr. Bell I'd try to locate it, and I haven't been able to, but there was a film that was taken on two 35-millimeter aerial photographs near Bikini Atoll, which is about 300 miles off of the coast of Japan, and they made a nuclear detonation using a Japanese destroyer. Now, bear in mind, all this I'm telling you is before the United States supposedly officially entered World War II.
Oh, yeah. In fact, the U.S. didn't enter the war until, what is it, 1942?
Well, this they used the Japanese destroyer as a target, and this aerial photograph was taken, or newsreel, I guess, or it was 35 millimeter, was taken at approximately 50,000 feet with a four-engine reconnaissance aircraft, and you can watch the bomb drop. You can see it as a little speck, or about the size of the head of a match, and all of a sudden you see this huge nuclear cloud, and you see this object in the inside the or as part of the mushroom cloud that goes up past 50,000 feet. I mean, you see it. They're looking up at it, and you see that, and you see this object in it. It's this 700-something-foot destroyer that they've gutted and used for a target. It comes back down, and it looks like it's crumpled up like a piece of cardboard.
Wow.
Well, that was the destroyer. Well, you look at this thing, and you say, well, my gosh, that was awful big. Yeah, and guess when they dated those films when they were processed. Well, guess when the date on it was? July of 1939.
July 1939.
Now, my dad suffered the effects of that. He was the commander on a ship that was supposed to monitor this blast. And he got radiation poisoning. It was kind of a family joke. They wondered why he was ever able to have any kids. He lost all the pigment in his hair. If he hadn't been in such good physical condition, he probably would have died. The military lied to him and said that he was suffering the effects of yellow fever. Something like that. They were giving him massive doses of quinine. And I can remember as a kid him just getting deathly sick. I mean, he'd just be under the covers running a horrible fever in the middle of the summer.
But a massive drop in his white blood cell count.
Hello?
He had a massive drop in his white blood cell count, so that would have caused him to have a fever.
He lost all the pigment in his skin. He could never, as long as I can remember, he couldn't even go out in the sun much. He had to be real careful because, he couldn't get suntanned or sunburned like you or I could and not suffer any real ill effects of it.
Amazing. So in other words, he saw this. Was obviously a very primitive nuclear explosion, so it was extremely dirty. I've actually seen pictures of technicians as long ago as middle 1990s going to the Bikini Atoll because it's completely uninhabitable. And there's so much radiation there, you cannot go there unless you're in a full-body radiation suit.
Yeah, it's so hot to this day that you can't even go on there, and that's what, 50 years later?
Right. In fact, the type of suits we're talking are what's called the top levels of the radiation suits, which is a very thick suit with a full helmet. It looks like a space suit, actually. It looks like a very heavy space suit that stops alpha particles, beta ionizing radiation, and gamma rays, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very serious. So tell us more. Now, okay, so obviously what happened is, this destroyer was bought from the Japanese. You have the compass. The films, I guess, was destroyed by a relative because it smelled like vinegar or something. But you've seen the film yourself and relate this. You've given me documents, including a kamikaze scarf that you sent me, and pictures of the compass taken from this destroyer that was bought from the Japanese and used as a target. So what came out of this research? What do you know that your dad knew about this research going back well before the Second World War that was going on between America and the Germans, and obviously the Japanese were involved too?
Yeah, I mean, apparently some of this stuff even dates back into probably the 20s.
Right, and the research that I know of is that the Lawrence Livermore Laboratories were doing work in the 20s and 30s with radioisotopes, some of it very crazy research with very little precautions. The University of Chicago and also the Oak Ridge National Laboratories, and of course, your information correlates perfectly with that, but those three facilities were the primary ones, and that they were also obtaining radioisotopic materials in places like Colorado.
Well, and the other thing, too, and he was telling me to see the Manhattan Project, and they used that, what was that thing down there in Tennessee, the Tennessee Valley Authority?
Exactly. Tennessee Valley Authority and, of course, the Oak Ridge National Laboratories.
Well,
for
yeah, Oak Ridge. But that TVA, that was just the cover. And what they were doing, and it took enormous amounts of electricity to process this uranium.
Right.
So they sold it to the public as being a big power project. But in reality, what it really was a place way back there in Tennessee where they thought nobody would, you know, find out about it. And they were processing uranium and nuclear fuel.
Right.
And it took such enormous amounts of electricity. I mean, the amounts of electricity, even today, would just boggle your mind.
Right. Well, and of course, they use this electricity because they're using centrifuges or other means to refine this, just like the centrifuges that are going on right now in Iran.
Yeah.
So tell us more about what happened in terms of, there was obviously a huge amount of radiation there. This radiation, of course, started in the sense of the above ground nuclear testing, because this probably was the very first explosion ever done. They had tried to say that it was the, I believe it's called the Trinity explosion on America in what was it, the test field in Nevada. That was not really the first. The first one was this one in the Bikini Atoll in the South Pacific. Is that right?
Yeah. And as I say, you know, all those guys were under such secrecy that they probably rarely talked to one another. I mean, if you stop and think back about it, you think, how could something like this possibly happen? You know, it just, to me, it just amazes me even today, is that how could they pull something like that off? Even then, when the newspapers and then radio, you know, how could they do that under the noses of the American public and literally sell them a snow job, thinking that they were doing them some good when in reality, all they were was preparing them for what, if they'd ever let it loose, was a nuclear Armageddon. In fact, I remember Dad telling me that he knew Teller, and by their own calculations, that if they set off one of these nuclear explosions, that it could very well turn the Earth into a chain reaction just like the sun.
Right, and in fact, they weren't certain at the time, just like the research going on at the Texas A&M University Nuclear Physics Laboratory, where they're doing antimatter-matter collision experiments with a special type of accelerator, that they could literally, if they create an antimatter an unstable bomb, they could literally turn the solar system into a black hole. Instantaneous.
And what's really so nuts is that you would think, well, if your calculations told you this, it's sort of like getting in the car and saying, well, if I hold my foot on the accelerator, I see a bridge ahead, and there's a chasm below, and if I don't stop, if I keep going, I'm going to fall off in that chasm, and then jamming your foot to the accelerator anyway. This son of a gun, in spite of that, exploded it.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Now, you see this going on with not only everything from like food additives to aspartame to the depleted uranium. And since, of course, the first Gulf War, they took something that was proven in the 1940s as a toxic poison nerve gas that they knew was against the Geneva Accord and international law. And they started making depleted uranium weapons that they deployed first in Kosovo and in the first Gulf War. And the amount of tons was, you know, relatively small compared to the amount since the second Gulf War, since 2003, which is equivalent to 400,000 Nagasakis. But it's important we know this history, because if the bomb existed, literally, and was in the hands of America and Germany, and of course Germany did explode a nuclear bomb back in 1944, according to the records, in the Baltic Forest, published by a German scientist that published this last year in Germany, that in fact the existence of nuclear materials and nuclear bombs, however dirty, existed before and during the Second World War. And we wonder, why was it America used the bomb against Japan, who obviously at the earlier stages was actually cooperating on its development?
Yeah.
What's your speculation on that, John?
Well, you know, I guess I get so overwhelmed by some of this stuff, I don't know what to think, except that, you know, you think it's obviously something so demonic and so evil that you can't even comprehend it. I mean, why would anyone want to purposely annihilate what could amount to the annihilation of practically all life on the entire planet. I mean,
I
can't even conceive of something.
Well,
like
it
that.
Actually is what's called a Luciferian satanic cult. It's a death cult. It's called the Death's Head, which you'll see on the Nazi SS officer hats, which is a skull and crossbones. And if you delve further, and we're going to be getting experts talking about Nazi Germany and Operation Paperclip, the movement of not only nuclear scientists, but torture engineers, medical scientists, hypothermia experts, transplantation experts for organs and limbs, that all came from Nazi Germany and came over to American universities, secret projects, and even mind control experimentation that the Nazi Germans did before and during and after the Second World War. So we have to understand that this is part of the movement of the Third Reich and its absorption into our military, industrial, and with secret intelligence operations, which literally controls and is integrated into the transnational American corporations that literally run the world. In fact, the largest 35 economies on Earth are corporations, not nations. The largest 35 economies on Earth are corporations, not nations. And they have their own armies, their own security force. They have their own scientists, and in fact, 95% of all science is classified or under the corporate aegis of proprietary research that's done only for specific corporations. And that's an important fact to know, because we're trying in this program to stretch your concept of reality both with technical information, historical correction, but also looking at the spiritual roots of why would this be, because most average people wouldn't think that this could exist. So, John, let's get further. Now, if the bomb existed before the war, how does that change, in your viewpoint, what the war means, the Second World War, which we obviously know was stage-managed, but how does it change it that there was a nuclear bomb capable of being made or deployed before the war even started?
Well, I apologize. I'm not able to hear you that well, and I hope
Okay. Don, can we turn up the mic so that John can hear me a little bit better?
Okay, that's a little better.
Okay, that's good. Okay, can you hear me now, John?
Yeah.
Wonderful. John, can you give us your speculation on why, what it means and what, in terms of changing world history, that a nuclear bomb existed before we, you know, had the battles in Normandy, the battles in Belgium, the terrible, the attrition and death that occurred as we moved our American and Canadian and European troops into Germany, the amount of dead Germans, the amount of bombing of civilian targets like Dresden. How does this change the nature of the war and the actual target of the war?
Well, the only thing that I can see that evidently these people from the onset wanted some kind of world domination or something, and didn't matter who they killed or what they did to get it, and or how many people that they killed, if there were, I don't even know how you would comprehend that kind of rationale, but I'm afraid that what it amounted to was a whole lot of innocent people got killed and sacrificed to the Moloch, really.
Right. You're getting into the ancient worship of Baal and Moloch, which are ancient pagan quote gods that go back to the issues we've talked about in other shows that deal with issues like the Nephilim or fallen ones, the hybridized supra race that felt that they had a lineal genetic right to rule over the non-predatory kind of ignorant masses. And in fact, this is the driving force behind all history, not just modern history, but all modern and ancient history. And you can't understand until you actually start putting the pieces together, because the dialectic of conflict and bringing about wars to bring about shortage, to bring about chaos, to bring about power by opposition, so you control both sides of the battle. In fact, it shows that both nations had the capability probably of developing or threatening to use nuclear devices, and that, in fact, America was the first to use it against Japan. But all these nations were actually there at the table building these probably in the 20s and 30s before the bomb was deployed in the 1940s. And we see it similarly with the proliferation of nuclear technologies. Our nation gave neutron weapons to China, and a senior scientist, Dr. Cohen, was actually present at the meeting with George Bush Sr. when the bomb nuclear technology was directly given to the senior members of the military and scientific people of the People's Republican Army in China. And he was physically present there and saw this. So we see a continuation in modern history of proliferation of weapons and of cooperation to make sure that these technologies of death are spread, including documents which I managed to track down from my contacts in the NSA, that the in December of 1993, through Lockheed Martin Inter Sputnik in London, England, they set up a dummy company to transfer the technologies to the People's Republican Army from the Iridium satellite system to allow the Chinese People's Republican Army strategic rocket forces to target American cities accurately because they couldn't do it before, and also to transfer similar technology to the Russians because they had similar problems with targeting their long-range missiles, which is why they had such high payloads and large bombs, because they didn't have accurate targeting. So that was actually given to the Russians and the Chinese by our government, which is completely treason. And we need to know, you know, what's going on. Why did they do this? Well, Alfred Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, is one of the 13 families of the Council of Druids, the top families in the world, like the Del Banco family and the Kennedy, the Plagiatanian family, etc. All these families run everything on the planet, okay? And the fact is the Krupps, which made the long-range armaments and artillery shells, actually shipped them to Britain, paid for by the British crown's gold bullion, and brought by escort by U-boats directly from Germany to Britain, even during the Second World War. So these families that are operating both sides of the battle, their plants were actually protected, and the British Royal Air Force was not allowed to bomb them or to bomb the General Motors plants that were sponsored, paid for by Union Bank through Prescott Bush, George Bush's grandfather, who funded the Nazi Germans to have the General Motors built Panzer tank plant in Germany. And most people don't realize that a great deal of the war machine was actually funded by American bankers in New York with our current president and the past president's grandfather. This current president's father, grandfather. So if you understand these things, if you want to rewrite history to what it really is this gross elite thinks completely different than you. They think of you as just a human resource that you could be expended. And that, in fact, their intentions now is to reduce the world population, which is why they're about to launch a nuclear war with neutron bombs and depleted uranium munitions against Iran, which very well might trigger an exchange of long-range nuclear weapons if this gets out of hand. So what do you think about this in terms of these situations, John?
Well, I mean, I don't know what to think except, you know, apparently there's so many nuclear weapons now in so many different countries that I suppose, you know, anybody hot-headed enough will probably send one off anymore.
Well, yeah, I'm going to give a few facts because I like to stimulate people by showing them facts. Some of it's very classified, and I'm releasing it. So if you're NSA, don't try to cut me off. The people are eventually going to hear all this truth. Number one, my friend in the IDF, Colonel Avi Lipkin, gave me information and showed me satellite photos of launching facilities built by the Communist Chinese over 23 years ago at the Salaya Oasis, 100 miles north of Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and another base 500 miles north that can fire a long-range missile, a solid-fuel rocket missile, go as far as London, England, or Tokyo, and can fire another missile every 30 seconds from either base. They can carry a chemical, biological, or nuclear payload, including neutron weapons or plasma weapons. And they also have all kinds of other weapon systems they've been buying, including cruise missiles. The Iranians have been buying the Yakants cruise missile, which is a hypersonic cruise that will travel at Mach 2. And when it gets near its target, it goes up to about 70,000 feet and then drops down on the target at 3 to 5 Mach, which is 3 to 5 times the speed of sound, is able to go around buildings and trees and so on at Mach 2, which is hypersonic, and is completely evades all radar detection. It's completely impossible to detect it by radar. So really? We have a weapon that could hit a battle group, and there's no defense. They also have the Shahed 3 and Shahed 4 missiles. These missiles are modified Russian missiles, the latest Russian missiles. They also have the latest advanced Russian anti-aircraft tracking, lock-on, and kill technologies that the Russians developed, not old garbage. They're selling them the very best to field test it in a live battle situation. And if there is a war, it's because the Russians are going to be testing out their good stuff for the latest arms build up and selling it to their allies. So what we have is a resurrection of the former, quote, Soviet Russian Empire. It just went to sleep for a little while, and now the Russians are back, owning all of the oil, the largest oil supplier in the world, the largest arms dealer in the world outside of the United States, which is the largest, the split depleted uranium weapons, landmines, and missiles, as well as selling all kinds of other hardware to Middle Eastern countries that, quote, are supposedly on our side, like Bahrain, UAE, and Saudi Arabia. So it's a very dangerous situation, and they have written up, and this is, goes right back to Albert Pike in the early 1800s, the grand wizard of the Orient levels of the lodges of Luciferian Masonism from Little Rock, Arkansas, that there were going to be three wars. The first two were going to be with Germany. The real target were the German people, who were actually the forefront, the Germans and the Austrians, of the reformation of the, quote, Catholic Church against the domination of the Catholic Church over Central Europe and the world. And the Reformation and the German people were becoming more and more powerful, so the real target was the German people, to destroy them and to crush them and to make them no longer a force in Central Europe. Well, that didn't work, because if you look at the reunited East and West Germany, Germany is the force in Europe, other than Britain, and is the economic powerhouse behind the growth of the economy in Europe. So all of this is completely stage-managed to set up a nuclear war, which they have planned. In fact, they've moved STRATCOM last August, set up under, I call it, President Cheney's command, because President Bush has got a little box in his back, and he's probably got a puppeteer, you know. He asked Condoleezza if he can go to the bathroom. That they targeted 440 targets. There's actually at least 200 hardened underground bases that they're going to try to get. But I don't know if they've got good bunker buster nukes, because some of these are up to 1,000 feet down, and we don't have any nuclear weapons that can go that deep in order to destroy these type of targets. So if there's anything that slows us, it's the ability for hardened, depleted uranium hypersonic bombs to go deep enough into the ground and then explode a micro-nukes that can actually destroy the underground bases. And, of course, the Iranians are fully capable of understanding this and knowing that this is a, if you want to call it a bunker nuclear war, that they would have to fight eventually against America. I think that this is a Waterloo for the United States. I think that this kind of war, being 3.5 to 4 times the surface area of Iraq, not previously destroyed, with a 4 times the population, with alliances with Russia and China, very advanced technology and a delivery system and capability of making cobalt and plutonium bombs, makes it an incredibly dangerous place and a meat grinder for our armed forces, which is probably why these generals are raising up such a fuss. So understanding the history of nuclear war and the proliferation of weapons on purpose by the military-industrial complex explains that. So, John, now we go back to the history. Now, so your dad, Milton Ragsdale, MacArthur Ragsdale, he personally was exposed to these things. He saw the evidence of this. What were his comments? Did he make any, or did your mother or anyone else around him make comments to tell you?
Well,
any comment about the war and the consequences and the release of the nuclear bomb into modern history?
I know that after all that, he was really against it. Other thing, too, was my dad was also head of reliability for NASA.
Right, so he worked on the Mercury and Apollo missions to make sure that launch was ready.
He was one of 5 engineers that developed the electronics guidance systems for those. And, you know, I guess he thought, well, he was getting away from it, and I really believe Dad thought he was doing it for research, and in fact they were. But the trouble was, in 1973, and that was when all those engineers finally quit NASA. It was when Johnson was in there. Literally walked into NASA's files and told them, because they were a quasi-government agency, that they had a right to it, and sat there and rifled all their files. So they got all the technology for the guidance systems and all the other stuff for these missiles.
Well, yeah. In fact, what they did is they took the NASA technologies, and now they have fully weaponized space. They keep on talking about trying to talk the Canadians or other nations into like I heard that they've talked Britain into sharing with the, quote, missile defense shield. And I worked with a guy that actually were on the Star Wars and the U.S. Space Shield program. I was their doctor. And I can tell you, I put the question straight to them. I said, how long will it be before the U.S. Space Shield works? They said, theoretically, our target is 2045. And I said, how much will it cost? And they said, $45 trillion. That's not B, that's with a T, trillion. $45 trillion, which is roughly 8 times the current gross national product of the United States. That's amazing, isn't it, John? John?
Bill, you still there?
Yes, I am. Yeah, can you still hear me?
The only other thing I will tell you, and I don't know, I can't hear too well here. I don't know if you mentioned it, but I will mention this. And this even dates back to the old atomic bombs. We're not even talking about the hydrogen bombs and the other stuff that they got. But according to my dad, that if one of those went off anywhere within probably 10 miles of a generating station or anything like that, that the electromagnetic radiation from just one of those would fry all their transformers, their generators, and probably most of the transmission lines, and would disrupt communications. I mean, all radio, television, anything you can think of would be totally disrupted.
Right, and of course, an EMP pulse, especially if it's, say, you know, let's say 5 miles up, 10 miles up. If you exploded one of those off, 80 miles off the Atlantic coast, let's say off of Baltimore, they've done calculations that it would knock out everything within a 1,500-mile radius from that. So everything from Chicago to Newfoundland to Florida and even past down into Mexico would be completely fried electronically by an EMP pulse just from a conventional bomb. So the first thing you can expect if there's a nuclear explosion is there's not going to be any more communications or electronics. Right?
Huh?
There won't be any communications or electronics if there's an explosion.
No, once that happens, it's adios muchachos. I mean, it's all over, folks.
Right, and the older systems, like the tube systems, were more resistant. So I was a doctor also for Atmel Corporation, and they were making the ferromagnetic EMP-proof chips to put in aircraft, jets, you know, guided missile systems and so on, and satellites, because they knew that the next era would harness EMP-type weapons. And, of course, we have fully weaponized space with electromagnetic pulse weapons that can actually send a pulse electromagnetic beam toward the ground. System is called the neutron fuse. That system actually can send an EMP pulse to an entire continent, can shape the pulse charge so it can knock out a city or a particular area of the world, and it can it's so powerful that the pulse can actually fuse the rollers inside an elevator and TIG weld it to the shaft. So we're talking about completely dead electronics in the zone of this. These kinds of systems are completely capable of knocking anything electronic out but not harming anything physical, like people. They also have phased gamma ray weapons that can produce what's called a mazed or phased gamma beam, which is like a laser that is very coherent, and that is called a grazer, and that can scan a large city area and cause death and destruction on an unprecedented level without even moving the petal of a leaf and kill everything within the zone, say, of a city like Beijing within a matter of seconds. So, that wouldn't even peel the paint from the walls or cause a thermal effect. They have nuclear weapons in space. They have bioweapons in space and cryo that could be targeted to any nation. They have race-specific viruses. They have all kinds of binary toxins. They have unbelievable equipment, one called a plasma cannon that can be a shoulder-launched airplane or satellite, and can hit a target with a plasma bottle at the speed of light and vaporize it at 11 million degrees. So this gives you an array of the kinds of weaponization. A lot of this came out of the perverted use of the NASA experiments and also the transfers of technology we've talked about in other shows that we received from, non-human visitors that we interacted with and made treaties and deals with. Some of them were, how can I say it, abused in the treaties on both sides. But nuclear warfare definitely is not as we've been told. So, John, can you give us some more insight on how your dad's life went from that point onward? What did he say to you about nuclear war And what did your mom say about
If you'd repeat that, I'm sorry.
What did your mom or dad say about nuclear war and about these kinds of events?
Well, it was almost a topic that was never discussed. I mean, it was something that even contemplating it was so horrible that you really almost couldn't discuss it, knowing what it could do. I mean, when you think about the fact that even if you lived over it, even assuming that you were out in some area where you didn't get affected by the blast or anything else, all your food supply, your water supply was going to be poisoned. You wouldn't be able to buy any gasoline. Life as you knew it would suddenly come to a halt. So it's
right.
Something that you'd even survive it.
Now that brings another question when you're talking about issues like that. Did you know what the plan is for FEMA and for the Emergency Management Association of America and also in Canada and other countries that have passed similar laws to the Model States Health Powers Act? Do you know what they plan on doing? They're planning on shutting off power if there's an avian flu outbreak or a disaster like, say, small nukes go off in different cities, even if the power doesn't go off due to these. They're planning on shutting down highways, hiring foreign military armed forces to actually maintain and control the population. And these civil detention facilities are set up because they're already color-coding the population. And they've already red or black-colored coded 325,000 American citizens that are U.S. citizens that are now unable to fly or get on any jet at any time because they're considered a security risk. These people are red or black, and if you're coded black, you're immediately executed if we go to code red. Which is a state of national emergency, and they need very little threshold to do that. So these things are real. You can go on Pastor Butch Paugh's website, and I've actually seen pictures as long as 7-8 years ago of actual rail cars with shackles in them, incineration areas, and I know specific locations. This is not just imaginary. So when they're planning things like an attack against Iran, when STRATCOM orders came from Donald Rumsfeld, he actually said that he was going to make certain that if anything happened on American soil, any kind of major terroristic quote, activity, that, end quote, that he would immediately make an attack against Iran. So they now have everything in place. They have their munitions, they have our neutron weapons, they have our bombers, they have our special forces. It's been proven from my contacts and elsewhere in the news, are already doing operations inside the borders of Iran as we speak. And so they're getting ready to make these targets with nuclear weapons and hardened, depleted uranium weapons that are going to cause a uranium cloud that will actually be rained down by monsoon rains over India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and all the way across Southeast Asia. This is very serious. In fact, they even moved the capital of Myanmar, or what used to be called Burma, because they knew the radiation cloud. This is from evidence back in January of last year, 2005. The Chinese had done calculations and knew that the radiation cloud, if there was an attack on Iran, would directly bring the center of that cloud directly over Myanmar and their capital. So they moved it. So that gives you an idea that the nations know that there's a nuclear war coming. And, of course, DU causes a massive explosion in cases of cancer, diabetes, birth defects, infertility, and is a weapon to reduce world population. So nuclear war is not necessary on a logical viewpoint. It's necessary for those who want to control the people, the population, the fertility. They want everything under their control, even human reproduction. They want it only in facilities where it could be done in a laboratory-type environment. So what questions would you be able to ask your dad if he could answer those today, John?
Well, I'm not sure if any I would have to ask him. I don't think, I can remember going back when I was a kid. They've completely closed it now. In the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., they had a whole section there that was devoted to the after effects of the radiation poison and from the blast over Hiroshima. And just to go in there to see the cancers and see the pictures, I mean, it was so awful, they finally closed it. It's not, I think they But, you know, to stop and think, and I guess as a kid I thought of it, well, you know, that happened in Hiroshima. Hopefully that'll never happen again. And we look back on that and saying, well, but then to realize is that, hey, look, if it does ever happen again, we're not talking about one little city like Hiroshima or Nagasaki where you're talking about the entire world or most of it. If you ever look at those, if you've ever seen those, and to look at the devastation of it, you just can't even contemplate it.
Exactly. In fact, the size of the bomb was a 15-kiloton bomb, which is 15,000 tons of TNT, trinitrotoluene, and the nuclear bombs. Hello, you still there?
Yeah.
The nuclear bombs that we had have now are 50 megatons, which is 50,000. The largest bomb was experimentally blown up was a Russian bomb that was around 65,000 kilotons, right? 65,000 tons.
Well.
And these bombs, literally, there are thousands of them. And even the micro nukes that are the ones that I knew about that were in Oklahoma City, these bombs had enormous power. And they have red mercury bombs that are the size of a softball that are bigger and more powerful than the Fat Boy and the other bombs that were dropped in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So we're dealing with technologies now that allow the miniaturizations the size of a baseball of a nuke that could take out the core of a city like Chicago, Los Angeles, Houston, Miami, San Diego, Seattle, San Francisco, these cities. And what my information from multiple sources, I'm going to repeat this so that on this show people will understand this. Multiple sources, CIA, NSA, and I won't release my contacts, but I can tell you many, many sources that I received information that there were nukes pre-placed in U.S. cities maintained by Russian GRU and Israeli nuclear Mossad agents that were maintained and kept like, quote, bananas is the word that they use, because bananas go bad and you got to test on Krytron detonators or fast switches and have to change the fissionable material irregular to be certain that the materials will actually detonate on command when you actually pull the plug. So they have these pre-placed. I also know about short-range nuclear missile silos in Central and South America, including in Mexico, Guatemala, Ecuador, Costa Rica, in northern South America, all aimed at American and Canadian cities. So you have to realize that we have some very serious things going on. These were placed by Russian and Chinese, and our government knows about them. We also have, not only European, but Russian cities are likewise wired. So if you're listening in other countries, you should realize that most cities in most Eastern nations have been pre-wired with nuclear bombs. And this is a very serious problem, the proliferation of which started with the research that they did before the Manhattan Project, and they rewrote the history. So now kind of looking at the whole scope of all of this before we close up our program today, John, what do you think it makes a difference in terms of whether the bomb was blown up in 1939 or 1945? What does it mean to you? What does it you think it means to the average American, Canadian, European, Russian that the bomb existed 7 years earlier? Or 6 years earlier.
What
do you think it means to history that the bomb existed 6 years before they said it did? It didn't exist at the end of the war. It existed before the war even started.
Well, it shows that what it really shows is that we were supposed to be painted as the good guys, and we didn't instigate this stuff, and we came along later, and it all tried to make it fit, and it, hey, you know, we got hit first, so it's kind of like we're free to do what we want, when in reality, we really didn't do that. They planned this thing, and they wanted it from the beginning.
Right.
So, you know, it sounds nice in a history book, and to say, well, the United States is a bunch of good guys, and they'd never do nothing like that, and they were just defending their country, and but no, that wasn't the case. And it's awful hard, you can't, just like they don't, Lord only knows they're not about to tell the kids in school about the Constitution. If they did, they'd say, well, hey, what are we doing here in this stupid school? Why are you taxing the daylights out of us? What is this stuff? So they're not going to tell the kids about the Constitution. no more than they're going to tell these kids about what really happened.
Right, and of course the reason is because if the public knew, they would rise up and they would take the control of the government, because the government is for the military-industrial complex, by the military-industrial complex, to serve the globalists that want to kill you, rape you, steal your property, dumb you down, destroy your genetics, and reduce the human population on Earth. And if people want to think that's negative, no, it's not, because a true optimist is someone who faces both the beauty and the ugliness of reality in all its majesty, both good and evil, and has a plan to respond to it, which allows you to survive and to thrive. And unless you face reality, and this is a very important point, and that's why we have experts on our programs, just to give you an idea of the kinds of people we're going to have on, to expand your knowledge base and to bring you out of the box. And if you're listening and you're in a foreign country, or you're in America or Canada, and you're highly compartmentalized in the military, industrial complex, or scientific, only about 4 to 5% of all science is actually available at university level. The professorial level is the lowest level of the what called the gateway to the occult knowledges that are in science has been done in these facilities that are completely unavailable to the regular university people. 95 to 96% of all science is quote classified by corporations or the military industrial complex. So, for example, we're going to have next week, we're going to have Steve Kuser. He's going to talk about the very interesting experiences he had at the university in Pennsylvania, the and talking about the plans of the globalists to bring about the avian flu. And, of course, I have experiences dealing with that and having documents read from the WHO. I call it Doctor WHO, the World Health Organization. We're going to have George Soroka on next Tuesday night talking about taking responsibility, life, and letting your consciousness rule you rather than thought. We have to stop being human doings and start being human beings. And that's the reason why our governments are out of control. That's why we let television tell us what to think and do and be. That's why we don't read. That's why we don't think more deeply. That's why we want a religious dogma rather than a relationship with the Creator. Next Wednesday, we have Joan Vian talking about, and she'll be back right from the pre-G8 summit, talking about the Bank of International Settlements and the Bretton Woods Foundation, where she's going to a special dinner tomorrow. That's the globalist organizations that run and control all of our cash and our finances in the world plans to control the world. And as we connect the dots and you listen to programs like this, we hope that you will actually understand. And we have on my website many, many nutraceutical solutions to allow these. But, of course, the government doesn't want you to know this. We have, for example, under development a nutraceutical that in its current form will kill all known pathogens. We have nutraceuticals that will help stimulate your tissues to completely detoxify all heavy metals and chemicals. Those are available now, but we're improving it. There are many, many solutions to the health problems, but they don't want you to know. No different than with the Pierce Arrow car developed by Nikola Tesla that in the 1930s. He could literally drive it around all day by tuning into the energy of the galaxy. We have people like a nuclear scientist from S4, Bob Lazar, talking about his hydrogen technology for using hydrides to actually store hydrogen safely so it's not a bomb in the back of your car, and having your own hydrogen generator using solar panels. So hydrolyzing water, literally to turn it into hydrogen fuel. So all of these things are available, but they want to suppress it. They want to fill you with vaccines. Vaccines that fry different nerve pathways in your brain. In fact, the 200 vaccines that are in the pipeline from Operation BioShield here in America and in Britain, many of them are called psychotronic vaccines that block certain nerve pathways and can make you no longer addicted to alcohol, tobacco, heroin, cocaine, etc., but turn you into literal zombies by blocking your enkephalins and endorphin pathways. These are all designed to turn you into cyborgs, so the day of the living dead, if you want to call it. And if you think this is imaginary, I'm a doctor and scientist who's seen the classified documents and the reality of it, because I was recruited to work on the cyborg project at UCLA in 1978 under Dr. Wallace Tortelot. And people would ask, well, why is he still alive? Well, firstly, because most people are so dumbed down they don't respond, The other side is impressed with anybody who stands up, and they must be think that, well, I must be one of them because I'm one of the few that will actually have enough guts to stand up to these predatory monsters, number one. And number two, if anything happened to me, you can guarantee it was their fault, and people might believe me, and they might have a little uprising or a big uprising. Because we're so close when we have generals coming forward to ask to get rid of Rumsfeld for his foolish policies in Iraq that we're now dealing with an impending nuclear war in Iran with no troops, and we're going to be going to a draft. They'll also mine the Strait of Hormuz, and we're dealing with a situation where it'll clamp off 25% of the world's oil and will crash the world's economy almost immediately. And we can see pre-earthquake, economic earthquake warnings of this, with the oil price hitting $72 plus, gold the highest level in many years, and silver, because, again, this goes back to nuclear history. Just like the ancient Greek philosopher said, he who does not study history is bound to repeat it. And that's why we have experts on like John Ragsdale. So, John, do you have any closing remarks for the people today so they can understand how important it is to grasp the truth of history, not the rewritten history like 1984 that said if we can modify every document, then we can change what history really is.
I think we need to realize that this government is not our government.
Right.
And it in fact, it probably hasn't been...
Ever.
Well,
ever.
Probably ever. That's correct.
Right. There's been a facade that it has been, and which is why they have the fringed flag of the Admiralty, the gold fringed flag of the martial law of the high seas, the Admiralty flag. At the same time, they have the American flag flying in our courtrooms, both federal and state. And the reason is because we've had martial law here for a very long time. And what they're doing is running a parallel and eventually going to strip down the Constitution and make it of naught by bringing Patriot Act and executive order until eventually they go code red and go to martial law, and that's the end.
And of course, I guess, you know, it's hard for me to put it into words and then probably truly in this perspective, except to say that the best thing to do is to get out of it if you're in it.
Right.
Get away
well,
from
I,
it.
Exactly. Get out of the support of the military industrial complex. Also realize that if you think you sold out and you've got a special position, you're actually put yourself in more danger. And what you should realize is it's very easy if a tiny minority of us decide not to go with the program, it'll end very quickly. I call it the New World Disorder. And it actually certainly doesn't offer anything other than death, not riches and not power, because ultimately the minions of this Luciferian plan are the first to die and the first to be sacrificed. So it's a very important time in history. We're dealing with literally a insane government with six major generals like Dr. Zinni that come forward and say that Rumsfeld must resign. We have them insisting on calling a nuclear war attack against a sovereign nation with no intentions and no threats against us in any way. And we have allies with this nation, Russia and China, that are setting up a proxy war and arming Iran to the teeth. So it's going to be a meat grinder for our military forces that are coming back now destroyed for depleted uranium experimental vaccines, inadequate body armor equipment, and inadequate medical supplies and food. So, you know, and then when they come back, they have to fly back on their own dime, and they're charging them for the laundry and their meals. And they won't even, they charge them for their body armor, which is level 2, which isn't even adequate, to stop a number 22 caliber bullet, and they're getting hit with high velocity 9mm Kalashnikov type armaments, often hollow headed, that the body 2 level armor is useless. And in fact, they don't even allow the troops to have this body armor. It's only for the generals, the level 3 and above. So they're putting our young men and women in harm's way on purpose, because the real crosshairs is not Iraq, is not Afghanistan. They're just a very good vehicle to destroy our young people, our military, and their ability to protect herself at home with our National Guard. Does that make sense, John?
Hello?
Yes, does that make sense, John?
Yeah, I guess in a way. I don't know. As I say, you know, none of this really makes a lot of sense.
It does if you want to see the depth of the evil. I have no fear about seeing the complete detail of the face of this evil plan and drawing it out to a point where people can no longer avoid it. It's like pinning down a living specimen to vivisect it and do an autopsy on it living to see the depths of exactly what's going on. Because if we don't do this and do it with all sobriety, then we will never get out of the matrix. Because the matrix that they're going to do involves mind control technologies, microchips, chips in every animal, every human, ability to track us and control and know our thoughts. I mean, read the sections of 1984 where they could actually detect your heartbeat, because you could change your face, but the machines could detect your heartbeat. They actually sold to 5 airports brain scanners that could actually determine, quote, if you were in fear or agitated, therefore maybe a terror suspect. They did this a couple of years ago, right after 9/11. This is the kind of insanity that's going on right now, the kind of paranoia that they're selling by the pound. And it's extremely dangerous. It's dangerous because the ultimate target is not Iran. It's not even Islam. It's the American public, because once you take down America, the bad cop, you can create a new world order, especially after a nuclear war, a depression, and a world full of all kinds of radioactive, depleted uranium pollution, and toxic genetically modified foods, which they're promulgating through the World Trade Organization. So it's not to be negative, it's to face the reality, and we do have solutions. We have at NutraMedical.com, we have many nutraceuticals. I'm available for consulting at 888-212-8871. The website again is NutriMedical.com, and my website, Clay and Iron, will be coming up shortly, and we'll have many radical documents, audio files, video files, all kinds of information, like the secret treaty of Fort Hunt. You'll be able to look it up. It was actually with General Reinhard Gehlen, a senior Nazi SS general that was brought over here to actually bring in the rat pack of the scientists, technologists, rocket scientists like Wernher von Braun. And I guess you met him before, is that right?
I'm sorry, what?
You met Wernher von Braun, is that correct?
Yeah, Wernher von Braun was a friend of our families. And by the way, Wernher von Braun became a Christian just before his death.
Right, so in other words, he saw the face of Satan himself, and he decided that the Luciferian face of the death cult of Nazi Germany and what had become of what was no longer a valid option.
I think he finally threw it all. I think, you know, he was a terribly troubled man. I can remember him coming out and sitting on the front porch, and the only guy I've ever known that could sit up and drink a fifth of Scotch whiskey in about 2 hours, and you'd never know he'd had a drink. And he was a fine man, and I met his wife. He had two daughters. But you know, I think he really, in some ways, he probably thought that he was doing some good in some sort of way. He somehow allowed himself to have gotten convinced of that.
Well, he was a compartmentalized minion of the globalist New World Order, which doesn't matter if you're Jewish, German, Catholic, Buddhist, Japanese, South American, Hispanic, it doesn't matter what race, color, religion you are. Ultimately, all of these organizations and all these nations are under the control of this beast. And we're going to discuss this in many more programs, so that as you'll get a clearer and clearer perception of the reality and the solutions to this. And that's why we want you to continue listening to Clay and Iron on the NutraMedical Report. And thank you, John, for giving us this frank interview. You know, where you have answers, you give them, and where you don't have an answer, you don't. And I really appreciate that, because it's important that the average person, the average American citizen needs to stand up, and also those who are inside the matrix. They need to contact me if they have information, both regular or classified. For example, I'm trying to convince one atomic scientist, atomic level 3 scientist, that's an engineer that works on the Aurora project, which is the Aurora space shuttle that actually is the next step well beyond the Apollo space mission vehicle, the shuttle, that has been flying for decades between here and the moon and also to our colony on Mars. You know, you might say, oh, that's impossible, they're not doing that. Yes, we have two entire fleets of off-world Aurora space vehicles flown by our pilots. We've been doing all kinds of space platforms, bases, mining operations on the moon. And people say, oh, no, this can't exist. Yes, it does. 80% of all of the Apollo space missions since the 60s have been classified as military. And, of course, they're not available, and they don't tell you that they've been back and forth or that they've ever done. They're now trying to tell you, well, we might return after 30 years. Or they even filmed a film showing that they tried to pretend that they never ever went to the moon, and they actually did this as a psyop to try to make people think, well, nobody's ever been to the moon. It's all just made up, because they release this and trickle it out through the various things. So we're always being lied to on every possible level. So do you have any closing comments, John?
No, I just think that, you know, if there's anything gonna ever be done, it's going to have to be on a personal level.
We want to stop nuclear war, don't we? We definitely need to come together. People like yourself that have great bravery to speak out like this, and many more, military, industrial complex, average citizens, everyone needs to stand up. You need to get documentation. The things like go onto the websites like Alex Jones' websites like Infowars.com. Check out sites like Rents.com. Get the original documents and books. Read books by the German scientists. Go Google it and find out that they actually blew up a very dirty cobalt bomb in the Baltic area in the 1944. This changes history. It changes history when Alfred Krupp is circulating and sending munitions to the British paid by the Queen's Bullion back in the Second World War to shoot and kill German soldiers. This is amazing. When the RAF has said, don't bomb, these buildings are owned by Alfred Krupp, and don't bomb the Panzer tank factories that were being built by the money from Union Bank, funded by Prescott Bush through the Nazis and General Motors. We built in 1950s the Volga plant for the Russians, for the largest tank production factory in the world, in the Volga River. That was America. So we need to revise what real history is, because real history has a dark hand that's been controlling and modifying things for the transnational globalists for all of history, not only modern but ancient. So thank you very much, John, for giving us that insight. And do stay tuned. We're going to be back with some amazing guests coming up here next week and in the coming weeks and months and years. And, you know, as I say always on my programs, you know, own the truth, and the truth will set you free. And there are no silent heroes. So don't be silent. Don't just sit there and think that you're safe if you're quiet. You're actually probably dead, because if they knew what you know and they knew you might speak, they'll silence you before you open your mouth. But if you open your mouth and you take action, you're much more likely to survive, because this game of survival, both mentally, spiritually, and our world, is going to require people to stand up and actually be counted. So thank you, John, for being brave and standing up. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Clay and Iron with Dr. Bill Deagle. And we'll be back again on Monday with Steve Kuser talking about the plans for the avian flu and some very interesting classified information that he has.
Okay.
And George Soroka on next Tuesday about life and consciousness, and Joan Vian on next Wednesday. So thank you, John, and thank you, everyone. And thank you, of course, Don and Doug Newsom at BBS Radio. And do listen to the other programs, of course, with Dr. Fred Bell. We'll be doing a conference coming up in May. That's a very important conference you need to attend in Laguna Beach. Do check out Dr. Fred Bell's website and his important materials for blocking electromagnetic and harmonic radiation. So take care and take action.
Okay, thank you, Bill. See you.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.